Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We are back in the rugby dungeon after a big week for rugby in the British Isles and Ireland. In fact, that's one thing I can never be sure of. Like, the United Kingdom. What's the United Kingdom? What is the British Isles? What is Great Britain? What's the difference between them? Do you know?
Yes. I've been told. Doesn't the British Isles include Ireland?
Oh, you're going to be people are outraged at that. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it does. And I think
I'm not sure about that.
The United Kingdom includes Northern Ireland.
Because it's the United Kingdom and Northern Ireland. So is the United Kingdom just the bit without Northern Ireland? I don't know. Minefield.
I've actually looked it up in the past, but never found like a concise, satisfactory answer.
Isn't the United Kingdom the fact that the kingdoms of Scotland and England united? And then Wales is just kind of like a principality. That doesn't really sound like a kingdom.
Well, and I don't want to upset Welsh people because it's a proud, fine nation. And I hop over to North Wales. I love a bit of North Wales.
I like it as a tourist spot, you know? I like it as a playground.
but what I was going to say, I think technically speaking, it's not a country. It's not a sovereign nation.
Of course not.
In the same way. It's
a large county.
I know the UK is a country, but it's not a country in the way that Scotland is a country.
That's exactly right. Scotland is more of a semi-country. Yeah. But I'm sure the British Isles is something like it does include Ireland.
Yeah, so I've got a little map here that does. So if you refer to it as the British Isles, that would include Ireland.
And this, by the way, is quite a relevant start to the podcast because it is British and Irish Lions squad announcement.
Yeah, and by the way, welcome to new listeners hoping to get some really good rugby content.
I think just from this, British Isles would be more of a geographical term,
yes,
which obviously includes the islands of Britain and Ireland and the Isle of Man. Great Britain would be Scotland, England and Wales, without Northern Ireland and without the Isle of Man, whereas the United Kingdom would include Northern Ireland but not the Isle of Man.
That's what Callum on the live chat feed has just point said. UK is NI, Scotland, Wales, England.
Wonderful.
There you go.
Great, there we go.
But simple.
But the beautiful thing about rugby every 4 years is we don't need any of that because we all come together.
Yes.
And what a beautiful thing that is.
Isn't it just?
I just mentioned, by the way, that there are some comments coming in on live chat. Do keep those coming in. We'll mention those. But we do stream live on YouTube when we do the podcast. And through the week, we have loads of other video content. And up there right now is a fantastic chat with Courtney Laws and Dan Bigger. And we'll be going up very soon, a chat with Chris Harris, three British and Irish Lions, who took a bit of time out of their very busy schedule to come and chat to Egg Chase as well, specifically JB.
Love Chris Harris. Love Chris Harris. I just love his story. Really, really nice guy. But I just love, like, a few years ago, he's playing in Tyndale.
Yeah.
And it's a weird...
He's playing against mugs like me when he was playing in Tyndale.
You played against him, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Was he playing fullback?
I played against him when he played fullback.
And you were back three as well, so you probably had to field a few of his kicks.
Did you bash him?
I remember us getting battered up at the beautiful ground of Tyndale. We went down to 13 men at one point against him. We get hammered in the scrum, and he was running riot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He had a very good day. It's about eight years ago.
If you think about his career, it's always been like, oh, got Newcastle, guess I'll get a Scotland cap. Got a Scotland cap, I'll get another one. Then goes to Gloucester, then goes to Lions. It seems to be every time he's got to that next level, he seems to have stayed there, which is pretty cool.
And he has the ability to continue to step up.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll get onto that. So, Yeah, so we're going to talk about the Lions today. We'll talk about the Premiership, the Super Rugby tournament's finishing. I do just want to start, though, with the fact that rugby clubs around the country are starting to open up and get back to some level of normality. And I got this little message from Lee Taylor, which I love stuff like this. Now rugby clubs can be part of our lives again. They're such an important part of the fabric of communities and of friendship groups and just of your weekly life. So this message here from Lee I got earlier, it says, "Afternoon, Tim. Could you give a mention to Abingdon Rugby Club?
Of course you can.
For playing the inaugural Tim Harwood Memorial Cup yesterday. He was a top bloke, our biggest supporter, home and away every weekend, following his son play for the first 15. He did a lot for our little club. If you can, that would be awesome. By the way, it was an inter-club game that ended 22-all, so rugby was the real winner. No, he should have played extra time until there was a winner. Come on, Lee.
Well, it's rugby's the real winner, or everyone's just kissing their sisters.
Yes, true. Well, I played an inter-club game this weekend, boys.
For Tockage?
No, it wasn't for Tockage. It was for Old Winians, because Tockage didn't have a fixture. And the irony of it is, Old Winians had a fixture against Oral, who couldn't raise a team, so they had a free weekend. Nobody told me. I could have taken Tockage up to Old Winians, but I wouldn't know that, so you played for Old Winians.
You got a game anyway.
You got a game, that's fine.
I got a game, and it ended with the most horrific injury I have ever seen on a rugby field. I've calculated that I have played somewhere in the region of 500, maybe over 500 games of senior men's rugby. So that's basically...
See, people are saying Mike Brown's impressive for getting 350.
What?
What?
350? Get pathetic. Lazy. what do you reckon? It's 20 to 30 games a season?
Depends on, if you average...
Cup games, friendly games. It could be as high as 600.
Are we counting the game where you went on for a couple of minutes at the end of a cup final and then threw your medal in a hedge?
Yes, we are. We are definitely counting that one. Anyway, Tib and Fib go on this lad, Josh. Bloody good player as well. Really good player. Great lad. And
how is he?
Going in for operation today.
Was he on gas and air and stuff on the pitch?
Bloody hell. Well, no, because...
They didn't have
it. No, when the ambulance arrived, I guess.
God. It's quite funny, actually. Not the Tib and Fib break. That's terrible.
I'm glad you clarified that.
It's the dark humour of rugby, which I... when I saw it, this is honestly the first time I've ever thought, I'm going to pack this in. This is a stupid game. And then I come back out changed, and he's obviously all wrapped up in his foil and whatnot. And it's just the dark humour going around. I can't actually repeat what was said, but because he couldn't move, we were suggesting all sorts of things that we could possibly do to him now. He's like, you guys are dickheads. But yeah, it did lighten the mood somewhat. But it just shows, doesn't it? I mean, it really hits home that it was the most innocuous incident that you can imagine. Like, nothing, there wasn't even really a rugby incident as far as I could see. I was right next to it. And this was an inter-club game at like level 7 or wherever Old Winians are, with limited contact rules. Safety first and foremost, someone breaks a Tib and Fib. Horrendous. It just shows it is a bloody dangerous game.
Do you know what it goes to show? It goes, I think that some people do extreme sports, some people do skateboarding and stuff. Elements of danger are important, and ever more so in a ever sanitized world.
Yeah.
And an outlet for a bit of aggression or a bit of danger is wonderful. These accidents do happen, and they're a shame when they do. But
awful.
It just goes to show anyone that steps over that white line on a rugby field at whatever level has some courage and bravery just to do it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, yeah. Get well soon, Josh. I'll catch him up for a beer when he's out with the scaffolding around his leg.
Gabriel on the live chat is asking when you're starting a CrossFit podcast.
The thing is, I talk too much about CrossFit. I don't think there'd be enough time to fit in all the things I want to say about CrossFit, so I'm not sure that's a wise idea.
You do love CrossFit right now.
I love it. I love the law.
I love it as well. I just don't talk about it all the time.
Then you don't love it, then do you?
I just love it.
You don't love it. You love half of it. You've got to embrace the lifestyle. And
the first rule of CrossFit is you always talk about CrossFit.
If you're going to CrossFit and you're not talking about it, you're not a CrossFitter. You're a guy who does exercise.
Now, one of the big reasons I love CrossFit is I give myself... I'm trying to count my calories, make sure I get enough grams of protein in a day and all the rest of it.
Very good.
One thing I do is... After a workout, I treat myself in the car on the way home to a carb killer bar.
I like that.
That's just my daily treat.
Yeah. You need some carbs post workout.
No. Does it not have a bit of sugar in there as well?
A tiny bit of carbs.
It'll have a tiny bit, but you want like...
What should I be eating straight after a workout?
According to, what's the name, the CrossFit guy on Joe Rogan the other day, a Mars bar. It's going straight from Mars bar.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Mars and Snickers do... They have protein versions of their bar. Yeah, they cost about £2 each, and they are delicious.
But they're not really protein. They have enough protein so that they can
put... 20 grams.
Is it 20 grams?
There's the cheaper ones. Yeah. There's like the 12, 15. But no, if you spend £2 a bar, you get the proper protein ones. They're good.
Yeah. So I am
anyway, rugby.
But so you want more carbs than your carb killer post-workout. That would be my advice.
I'll be tracking the calories over the next few days of a professional rugby player. I can't tell you which one because obviously that's confidential, but I'll be interested to see.
What do you mean you'll be tracking the calories?
Literally on my fitness pal.
like voluntarily. You haven't.
Yeah, yeah. So
you're not like, coaching.
You've not hacked into a mainframe.
No.
Or you're not his dietitian.
God, no. No, I said, can I see what you eat on like a daily basis? Just to see, see how many calories you're getting through. Because we guessed it'd be like four. The chef of Cell Shock says he needs to make 5,000 calories for someone like Halani Alika when he was there. That is his running total.
Just to keep his carbs that size.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that would be for him to maintain weight, I would imagine, based on the training that he's doing, rather than that won't be like a bulk phase.
Yeah. So
Halani Alika doesn't need a bulk phase.
I want to see he does not need a bulk phase. So I want to see what this guy's eating. Just out of interest, like see what these athletes are actually doing on a day-to-day
basis. That'd be fascinating.
Yeah.
Without naming names, you'll have to share a bit of info next week.
Yeah, I will do.
Yeah. Right. Look, Phil, JB and I, and in the feed right now, you can go and listen to it. JB and I gave our initial reactions post Lions squad, but I'm interested what you thought.
Very happy, to be honest. I think overall, there's very few changes I'd make. Obviously, Doggers would get in my team for his Lions then Italy chat. very happy overall. And I think it's interesting to see...
If anyone's watching, JB's just gone to do some double unders and pull-ups. Go on, Phil, sorry.
I think it's interesting because it gives you a flavour of how they are likely to play and some of the positions. And what I mean by that is kind of the back row... is interesting, and particularly the balance, given you've got a few of the smaller guys, the guys like...
3-7s. Well, yeah. Not the Tom Curry small, but yeah.
Yeah, well, and the 2-7s plus Sam Simmons. So Hamish Watson,
Justin
Tipperick, Simmons, Curry, there was no way Curry wasn't travelling.
No.
Curry can play any one of those positions at international level. He can play 6, 7 and 8 at international level, which means he's amazing for a Lions squad. But you've got those smaller guys, you've got kind of the two more traditional eights, and then you've got a plethora of locks who can play back row. And so I think that's an indication of what the two balances are. If they go for more of a traditional setup, you're likely to see Curry at 6, but probably the first port of call for the test matches will be one of Tyburn, Courtney Laws, Hendo possibly, or Mario Toji playing in the 6 shirt.
Agreed.
To give that extra jumping option.
Agreed.
If you've got the extra weight with Alan Wynne-Jones and possibly Johnny Hill as kind of almost two tight headlocks in the pack. So that's one interesting thing.
Courtney Laws, by the way, in the chat the other day, used the phrase tight headlock. It's a legit thing.
It is legit. It is legit.
It is now. No, we started talking about it. The last few years.
So I think it was the thing which was in like the 60s and now it's come back. It's sort of come back around. That's what I think.
The other thing I think is interesting is the selection of the centres. And you've selected 4 centres who, they're not carbon copies of one another,
three centres really and 2 kinder centres.
Yeah, you're right. So Harris, Henshaw, Bundiaki they're all direct. They're all very defensively strong. They're all hard runners. They can do a little bit of the all-round stuff, but that's not what they're really renowned for. They're renowned for hard running and hard hitting. Then you're quite right, the two kind of wild card centres, Daly and Faz, it makes me think either he's going to go for 2 hard hitting centres or Farrell will be the first choice 12 based on that team. And looking back at Gatland's selections for both the Lions and also for Wales over the years, he does both. He's not totally one route. I mean, you kind of think a lot of the Gatland Wales teams are the likes of, well, Jamie Roberts for a lot of it, with Shanklin or with JD2. But he's also, when he's had guys like Henson or even like Hook or like Hadley Parks, who again could do it a bit of everything, he's used them. So I don't necessarily think it's one or the other. He could use both depending on the scenarios. And Elliot Daly he's a surprise to me because his form recently has not been brilliant, I don't think. Certainly not from what I've seen. But there's two reasons why I think he's going. One, you've already mentioned, Tim, you mentioned it in your pod the other day, his versatility. He can play 11, 13, 14, 15, which few players can. But also, there are two tests at altitude.
Yeah.
And at altitude, he will be able to slot penalties from 60-plus metres. So,
or at least he'll be able to put in the back of South Africa's mind.
Well, yeah.
They've got someone that can kick.
Someone mentioned this online the other day, and I thought it was a really interesting point on Twitter. He said, what is the, how many penalties will be conceded in that range where Owen Farrell can't kick, but Elliot Daly can kick? And is it worth it for maybe a different player who might be slightly better on the park? Now, as it happens, I think the Elliot Daly thing is interesting because we judge him as England's Elliot Daly, who isn't very good at the moment, to be fair. But
his form wasn't great in the Six Nations.
Yeah, he had a couple of decent games. I think you pointed out once. There was one game where, I mean, it's all relative, but there was at least one game where he was England's best player, which was not saying a lot.
Yeah, and he got criticised in that game unfairly, I think, but he didn't have his best tournament overall.
There's no question about that.
Well, I just think Lions Elliot Daly, who plays on the wing, is a different proposition. I think you put Elliot Daly on the wing for England, and he looks great. I just think maybe they are asking a little bit too much of him, trying to make him into the thing which he's not. And if you just let him play on the wing, let him rove and attack in his own time rather than asking him to do a very hard job at fullback, he might be a much better player for it.
Well, we've seen on the O2 inside line videos in the past, Elliot Daly makes an amazing coffee. He's a legit barista.
Yeah.
He could be on tour for his coffee making skills.
Who else is legit in the world of baristing?
On the Lions squad?
No, but in general.
I know Ford and Manu.
Manu.
Are very good.
Manu's really?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Really?
His latte art is better than his footwork. I mean, it's awesome. And his footwork's great, allegedly.
So, yeah, I think overall with the squad, there's very few that I would change. I wouldn't have favoured Duane van der Merwe. I would have gone for Stockers or Johnny May, as we said the other day.
Yeah.
Now, the one that obviously for the last couple of days, or certainly since yesterday, has got the most
before you get onto that, can I just say one thing? Yeah. It's on the wing thing. Right, I'm going to say this, and I'm putting it out there, just floating it. I'm not... Okay, so you've mentioned Duane van der Merwe. I actually picked him in my back three options, for the record. But there is just one tiny little bit of me that just goes... One thing, and this is what you're going to come on and talk about, is how much the Lions means to people. And Duane van der Merwe, he's only been in Scotland international for like 9 months, and he grew up dreaming of being a Springbok. And there is just a tiny, I don't begrudge him because he's earned it. There's just a tiny little bit of me that goes, he's taken that which Johnny May or
Stockers
or whoever have been dreaming of since they picked up a rugby ball.
Yeah.
And so that's not to say Duane van der Merwe doesn't deserve it because he's earned it on merit and fair play. But I'm just saying that's just on an emotional level.
Which other converted players have been?
Bundiaki.
Nathan Hines.
Ricky Flutie.
Yeah, Flutie. Bentio.
Yeah.
CJ Sander.
Who was the guy that had Shontaine Harpy? Didn't he go one time? Or am I thinking of...
No, you're thinking... Flutie, Ricky Flutie did.
Yeah.
Shontaine Harpy did not.
Jared Payne went.
Yes, Jared Payne did. There's quite a long line of them.
Did Stuart Abbott go?
CJ
Sander.
Maybe, yeah.
In 2005.
There was talk about recalling Brett Sinkinson, which was very funny at the Gunmore Gate.
And listen, that's not what this is about, but this links back into what you were about to talk about, Phil. The Lions is more than just a game of professional elite level rugby. There's emotion, there's tradition, there's history in it, which is part of the reason why it captivates people so much.
Can I?
And Duane van der Merwe doesn't get that. And that's not to his, that's not a criticism. He just won't get that.
Can I just throw something out which will be horrendously unpopular about the Lions?
Go on.
So one of the things which I'm a little bit uneasy about is all of the stuff about the history and the tradition. Because to a large degree, when you start talking about history and tradition of things, it means that is more important than the competitive nature of the thing. And when the thing you're talking about is sport, then, you know, you don't necessarily think, do you, of the history. Oh, actually, that's not wrong. That is wrong, because you do think about the history of the NFL. But the overriding thing on the NFL is the standard and the quality. And it's same with the Premier League, really. The overriding thing in football is the standard and the quality.
Yeah, I get that. But to know that you're pulling on a jersey that
is incredible.
X player did in the past, and whether that's the Lions or whether that's for your club or for your country,
yeah,
that's part of it. That's part of the emotional connection we have.
Yeah, that's
fair. I think the Lions does very well to blend those two things.
Yeah,
both teams, this South Africa and the Lions this year, and when it's New Zealand, both teams always want to win. And the history doesn't detract them from them wanting to win in that year.
Isn't the point of the Lions that it's meant to be slightly amateur to give them a handicap? Because otherwise, you would expect them to win every time. If you kept the Lions together,
what do you mean meant to be slightly amateur?
Yeah, well, because the challenge of the Lions is you're fusing four nations into one. Now, I'm a little bit suspect it's that challenging, but you know that's
the time frames are fairly challenging.
So the amateur nature of it is, yeah, it's. You know, short sort of time together. You fuse a bunch of boys on tour.
I think it's more the context of in the February and March you're whacking lumps out of each other, and in the July you're playing together.
Mm. Yeah.
I love the history and how much that means.
I just think like the primary thing in sport should be the standard that you're playing.
Well, and that's part of the reason why it means so much to these players.
Although, having said that, like, no, actually, state of origin is all about the standard, but then there's a lot of history.
Yeah, I don't think
maybe they don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think you can or should try and unpick them. Yeah, you don't want to have to wipe the history to allow you to have the best standard, do you?
Wipe it all, rebrand it.
Yeah, every year, a new cup, burn the cup, melt it down. We need something new.
British and Irish Bears.
Anyway, on the what it means and the importance of it to individuals and to fans and stuff.
Yeah. One of the other surprising ones was Sinclair being left out. Mm. I genuinely think that is surprising. He was on pretty much every team that I've seen.
Surprising, actually.
It's hard to think of one. And it's even more surprising because he went 4 years ago. When he was a relatively young man, certainly in terms of prop years, I think he's developed in that period of time. He's got a lot more caps under his belt.
He has. Didn't he also win the penalty that won the second test?
He jumped into a tackle.
But he also, and I wonder if this is counted against him with Gats, but he was on the edge. I mean, he was clearly very emotional 4 years ago and quite angry 4 years ago, and he almost cost the Lions a few penalties in the closing minutes of one or two of the test matches because he was right on the edge in terms of that emotional edge response.
Which has also reared itself over the last 6 months in an England jersey as well. Penalties.
Penalties are not a big problem for him, I don't think.
Well, the nature of the penalties. They weren't penalties for a scrum technicality. There's been penalties for just...
That is a good point. Like, the unnecessary nature of the penalty rather than, you know, just being beaten by... You know, anyone can be beaten in a scrum.
Nonetheless, I had him in my squad, and it's a surprise. I agree with that.
I think those penalties, just on that, I think those in the last 6 months have been more like foolish, technical, silly penalties rather than thinking back 4 years. And it was... Yeah. He was letting his anger and emotion bubble over at that point, to the point where he was not in control. And I think that, to his testament, that's something that he has massively improved over that period.
I don't have a huge issue with his discipline. I mean, there is
no.
My thoughts on him now he's not made it are, well, he definitely is not playing as well as he can, because when he's playing his best rugby, he's a world beater. And you look at him going down in the World Cup, there is a good argument to say he makes a material difference to that score in the World Cup. I'm not saying England win it with him. I'm just saying he makes a difference. So he can be the world's best, if not the world's best, at certain aspects of the game too.
A prop that can operate as a fly half, there's few better.
Yeah, he's got good hands, he can scrimmage, he's powerful, he can hit, he can really hit, he can do all sorts of great things. So love him there. He does fade in and out of games, and he can do this for weeks at a time. And I think his move to Bristol has not helped him. He's not hit the heights that he hit earlier on in his years at Harlequins. And sometimes you watch him at Harlequins in particular. I remember watching him at Ulster. He looked completely uninterested. And it's that phasing in and out, which I wonder might have cost him.
It's hard to judge any England player. Like, again, I talked on the podcast midweek about how sorry I felt for Johnny May. I think it's the call I made in my prediction, and I understand it. But it's really hard to judge a winger who's playing in a team that's playing really badly.
Well, John Afoa is doing phenomenal at Bristol. And one of the things that Ben Darwin says, which I always listen to, is when you do move teams, it does take a little while to get settled in. And that's not his fault. You know, it's just a new system.
But he's not settled into the England team. He's played more England. He's played as many England games as Bristol games.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's part of the problem with Bristol, is he's not been available for half of this season.
So he's not been available. It's a new system. He can phase in and out of games. This is what Gatland will be looking at. And I wonder if he just thinks there's just better, more consistent options this time.
That's obviously what he thinks, yeah.
With all that considered, I think he's hard done by.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think most people would agree. As in, he was picked in pretty much every team that I've read.
Anthony Jemson makes a good point on the live chat. He could still make the squad if injuries happen, which they will do between now and the end of the season and during the tour.
There is an advantage from him that I think he would be the first cab off the rank if either side of the scrum goes down, because Andrew Porter can play both sides.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Andrew Porter's got the nod, because he, on a tour like that, he can cover and he can play. I don't think
You could sit him on a bench as a loose head prop and play him on the weekend team or whatever, as a tight head prop.
Exactly. You can play him, or you can play him on the midweek game as a loose head, as a loose head, and then
if needed, yeah,
weekend game as a tight head. So yes,
yeah.
Every prop should know how to do this. It's infuriating.
Yeah, but very international level.
What do you think?
Andrew Porter is a freak. Can we just point out that it's only in the space of a couple of years he's gone from he's gone from loose head prop making his international debut to tight head prop British and Irish Lion.
Pretty good.
That's unbelievable.
And he started most of the Six Nations, if not all of the Six Nations, because Ty Furlong was injured.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive.
Unreal.
Let's talk about the interview then.
Yes.
I'll kick off. I feel profoundly uncomfortable when men cry. That is my view. I don't like it. I don't think it's brave.
Well, let's get into that. Why don't you lie down on your antique chaise longue? Let's get into this. There's clearly some things going on in the past, Jimmy. What happened?
There's nothing wrong with it. I just feel very uncomfortable and I don't like it.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with it. I just really hate it. But I hate
you. You called this episode on our live chat, Let the Boys Cry.
Yeah, Let the Boys Cry. I just think, don't like emotional incontinence. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't know. I really enjoyed both.
I like what you said, though.
So I really enjoyed both chats, as in the Kyle Sinclair chat with Sarah Elgin, which I thought Sarah was brilliant. Sarah Elgin was brilliant.
Right. You won't get a man's name wrong.
And Kiel Sinclair was also very good.
Yeah. Yes, quite.
I thought that interview was brilliant. I thought the emotion that he showed, and so this is kind of the point that I was making before, or certainly laying up to when I was making the point about his
me and JB kept interrupting you from making. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, the emotional side, where it was wrist bubbling over in the past. It's incredibly interesting to see how he has reacted to it and used it to put in a man of the match performance, and at times was destroying his South African counterpart in Pierre Schumann.
He was.
I thought his response was excellent. And then the Ugo Patlam, where Patlam, every time I listen to him talk about the togetherness of the team and the love and the emotion, it's not necessarily how I would or how I've seen rugby teams in the past, but the way that he does it with his authenticity that gets the players to buy in is quite incredible. I thought that was brilliant. And Ugo, again, it was an authentic response for someone who, the two of them, Ugo and Sinks, have both been lucky enough to pull on the Lions jersey.
Uh-huh.
and Hugo is thinks a good close friend of him, and to see the emotion between the two of them of what it means. I really enjoyed, I thought the whole thing was captivating television.
I would say anything more negative about it, because I think there's a lot of good stuff in there. I agree with a lot of what you said. A guy broke his tib and fib on Saturday in the middle of Openshaw. Nobody cried.
You were saying what you were going to do to him while he was lying down.
I'm just saying, nobody cried.
Well, okay, but on the flip side, and Carl Sinclair's been a guy that, well, he said he's never experienced this before. So he's managed to get to already being a British and Irish Lion before having a massive moment where the thing he was working so hard for gets taken away. I had that a lot earlier. I remember it was under 16s and I got to the Southwest team and everyone was telling me, after the match I had, it was against Southeast, I think it was, everyone was telling me, if you don't get picked now for South of England to go to the England trial, you never will. You just had an absolutely amazing game. I didn't get picked. And I drove back in the car. My mum drove me and two other guys back to the town I was from. And I held it together until we dropped off the last bloke. And then I just completely bloody lost it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my mum's reminded me of that since. And she just said, you know what, I could see you're waiting, but it's how and when it comes out. And I didn't want to take away from one of the guys in the car that was like, he got in. So I was like, I'm not going to make this about me. But so that's what I really liked about Carl Sinclair, is it's channeled and it's directed.
I thought he played, you know, if you want to take something so-called inspirational, it's not the fact he cried on TV. That's not inspirational. His bloody performance was inspirational.
Yeah, agreed.
Watch his bloody rugby. I don't want to hear him cry.
I'd love to know what's led. I'd love to delve into your past. Let's go and have some Negroni sometime and have a chat, James.
And I'll cry. then I'll cry.
Let it all out.
Was there anything else I want to say about that? Not particularly, I don't think.
Right, so the one thing, and I'm in a position where I stand and hold a microphone into people's faces, and all I ever want to hear when I'm in that position professionally and see when I'm sat at home on the sofa is I want to hear authenticity. Mm. And in whatever form that comes, if that's anger. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that time you said it? I think it was Hamish Watson, and loads of people gave Hamish Watson a load of crap.
Yeah.
When straight after a game, he got put in a press conference and he said, and what came out is the disappointment, the sheer frustration of the game, and he got a load of crap for that. Mm. And you rightly pointed out, hold on, what do you expect? He's just played 80 minutes.
Doesn't have any idea what
And he's absolutely gutted that they've lost. He hasn't seen replays of what happened. Don't give him crap for having an opinion like that.
Yeah.
And I totally agree. Sometimes it comes out as anger. Sometimes it comes out as bitter disappointment. Sometimes it comes out as just cannot even get the words out because you're just shell-shocked. But that's what I want to see. Whatever it is, I want to see the true person. And there's too many times, because of the way people react to stuff that people say, you don't actually see any authenticity.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Completely agree with that.
I mean, I'm just fortunate in my life. I've not suffered enough success to be in this situation.
One other thing I will mention on this, actually, and your, I think Jay, you mentioned it on your midweek chat, Lions Reaction. Jay, I owe you a tenner.
Oh, you do owe me a tenner.
I'll give you that after the pod.
Separately, by the way, I owe you that tenner for those things that you got for me that time.
So
if I give you a tenner and then you give JB a tenner at your leisure.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
You mentioned the Mike Phillips tweet, which was Lions don't hope, Lions know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, so that I was thinking about that while I was watching this interview, because there were a few names on that team sheet that we were all expecting. We were all expecting Faletau. We were all expecting Ty Furlong.
Tom Curry,
definitely. A lot of people would have been expecting Faz. Everyone knew that Stuart Hogg was going to be in there.
Yeah.
Everyone knew Alan Wynne-Jones.
So
there's like that top level, they know. Then I would put things in the next level down where they're confident. They're probably supremely confident, but they don't know. And there's that little 20% of doubt. And I think to play rugby at all, to go up against 15 other blokes who want to hurt you, you have to be confident. And it came across that Sinks was supremely confident in his own ability, but this has obviously knocked that confidence and knocked that expectation, that knowledge that you are the best or you're at least good enough to be in that team. And that will be incredibly hard to take. Exactly as you mentioned before, for someone who right through his age
clearly
group,
he's never had this, which is unbelievable. That shows how talented he is.
Yeah, even including the last Lions, he's always been on the landed on the right side. That must be really hard to take.
Yeah, I completely
and
agree.
And so I thought he handled it brilliantly. And it was a superb performance.
He handled it okay.
And it was really, he
played very, very well.
He played brilliantly.
What I really liked is he actually said, there's a lot of anger bubbling away. I don't understand the decision right now. I'm sure I will in time.
Yes.
He even said that. It wasn't just I'm gutted. It was basically he was saying, I've been wronged.
Yeah.
Which I love, like you say, the confidence of the guy to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you notice who he referenced twice? His mentors.
No, I didn't.
So he referenced them twice. Saviour World.
Huh? What? Sorry, what are you saying?
No,
I missed that.
He referenced Saviour World.
Who did?
Kyle Sinclair.
I didn't hear that.
He mentioned it twice.
What?
In the interview. My mentors.
Saviour. My mentors. Saviour World.
Yes. So you should know these guys.
Are they the guys with that
James O'Connor and Cipriani have used? Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Breathing.
Yeah, which evidently, I think a lot of rugby players have connection. I think Marlon Yard and others do. I think there's
JB's face right now. JB's face. Go on, JB. Okay, what are you thinking?
Look. I think when you're at the absolute top level of sport, and Carl Sinclair is there, a lot of the other guys who are using Saviour World, I can't believe that they've come back into this. I imagine what is actually going on is they are looking for every single advantage they can get. And it just happens to be that this guy comes into their life when they're absolute prime athletes, and then they go and produce a good performance, and they confuse correlation with causation. I'd be amazed.
What does Saviour World do exactly?
That's a great question.
I have no idea.
They take players. They take people on kind of retreats.
I don't know if that was part of that or whether it's just.
Oh, okay.
I know they're connected.
Whether they're qualified or not, I don't know. But it could be a fitness. It could be a
psychologist type thing.
What qualifies bloody Pat Lam to talk about love and feeling and involvement, or Alex Anderson to talk about,
win rugby games?
It kind of gets them where they need to be. Now, I'm not overly enamoured by all that stuff, to put it mildly. Now, on the...
This episode's an intervention for JB.
your body language is very defensive.
I'm raising my voice. Because rugby, so much of it is mental. I think at the very, very top level, maybe it has some sort of impact. I don't know.
I imagine it does. I was talking to a sports psychologist who works in F1. Two of his drivers... We were talking about this the other week. I talked to him a couple of days after two of his drivers had both crashed into the wall. And he was kind of saying that the drivers were fit, they were prepared, physically prepared, they weren't dehydrated, they'd had enough sleep, they were performing well, and then something like that happens. And so he, as a sports psychologist, gets dragged in because they've identified the physical problem, it's not a physical problem, therefore it must be a mental problem. And it's quite an interesting thing, and people draw those kind of correlations between events, and it might not have been that, but I guess coming back to this, that ability to have a sounding board, have someone who will listen to you, and give you advice.
Can I give you a great example?
I love that, because I'm guilty of this myself, so I'm only saying this because I've done it as well, but I love it. JB interrupting Phil to say listening's important. Yeah.
Good. Chris Harris today was talking. I did an interview with him. I'll throw it up on YouTube very, very shortly. I'll put it on YouTube. And he was saying one of the setbacks he suffered in his career was playing against Wales. So his debut was against Wales, and he said the occasion basically got the better of him, and then it just wasn't his best game. I said, did you tell anyone that? Like, did anyone ask you, or did they give you any feedback? Because obviously in Scotland, there'd be a load of guys that have coped with going from 20,000 in club rugby, if he's lucky.
Yeah, yeah.
up to 60 or 70,000 in the millennium, all going mental.
Yeah.
No one prepared him for it.
Yeah.
Which I think is incredible. I mean, he didn't say no one prepared for him, But like on the debrief, you're like, how did you feel? Did you think, I mean, because that's really good information for the next guy that comes up, I would have thought.
And that reminds,
so that is important.
That stuff is really important. It reminds me of a chapter in Soconomics that JBU read relatively recently, that until 10 years ago, 15 years ago, clubs were buying young men from Argentina, Brazil, Spain, bringing them over to England, to the Premier League, and doing nothing to prepare them. Like, an 18-year-old kid from Brazil comes and lives in London with 50 grand a week in his pocket, and he doesn't play his best football. What are you expecting? Like, you need these. You need people to be as prepared as they possibly can be. And if it involves a wellness retreat, some breathing exercises, or just someone to talk to about what is going well and what is going wrong, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah. He's clearly not doing what James O'Connor and Sippers did, because he hasn't grown his hair out.
He's not playing with nunchucks.
What they called Saviour.
Saviour World.
Saviour World. There was one bit where when James O'Connor was involved, where they believed that, kind of like that whole Samson thing, cutting your hair off. It's like,
New England Patriots
cutting off your manhood.
New England Patriots buried a bloody football in the middle of their ground to say, you know, that performance is dead and buried, and we'll move on from here. You know, there's a lot of nonsense happens in sport. The thing which gets me is, like, if you're so focused on, I don't know, your culture and building your culture or this, whatever the thing is, and actually your problem is your line out. don't let that thing just overwhelm everything. Because someone might just look at your video, like look at your game, and say your shape looks terrible, or you're not communicating in defence, or you're going, you know, like that. This is why I really like Steve Diamond as a coach, because he would.
He's not a coach as a DOR.
No,
he is a coach. He's a forwards coach. Yeah, sorry, take it back.
But no, as a DOR, he'd sometimes have to step back into being a coach, and he would say in a press conference, I remember it vividly. Sale had lost, and someone asked him like, "What was wrong?" No, Sale had won week before that they'd lost. Said, well, what was wrong? And it's just real basics. Like, they didn't know the jobs were on the ruck. They didn't know. It was basically guarding up on the ruck, leading the line. They didn't know the basics, so we've had to go down, strip it back, and do that. And you can see how you could get carried away with online, you know, breathing retreats and you know, writing on shirts and speaking about your family, when you don't know to guard the ruck. That to me is more important.
Yeah,
and I just think you can get carried away sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know the ins and outs of how most of these clubs operate, but I would totally agree. If any club is doing breathing exercises when they should be practicing scrimmaging and line out,
you always
then you've got a real issue.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. Right, when I coach, and I know it's a world away where I coach. It's a world away from being in professional rugby. If the attack looks rubbish when they're playing touch, you know it's going to be, they're not wide enough, they're not deep enough, or they're not coming onto the ball with enough pace, or it could be skills. It's not because they disagree on Israel and Palestine, or it's not because they haven't shared family secrets, or it's none of that. It's because those fundamentals are not in place.
This echoes back to last week's podcast when you were saying that it's all about coaching specific stuff, not, I can't remember, but let's not go down that rabbit hole again.
Yeah, agreed. We just mentioned James O'Connor.
Yeah, Super Rugby.
He did well today.
AU winner, James O'Connor, try scoring captain.
Scored all of the Reds points. Scored every single one of the Reds points, including an 85th minute try.
Good for him
to win the game.
Which
against the Brumbies.
The one bad bit again. I know there would have been some horrific conversations going on in the broadcast truck, and what the reporter on that Super Rugby AU game would have been hearing is probably a director swearing his or her head off. Because they missed James O'Connor's try, basically. The camera was zoomed in on a ruck.
Oh, no.
And James O'Connor was scoring.
Because it was a close to a grounding.
Taniela Tupu.
Yeah.
Nearly scored. Nearly,
in fact, he probably did score.
Possibly did.
And actually, some of the Reds players had already run over the try line because they were celebrating. Some of the Brumbies defenders totally switched off. I mean, Brumbies at that point had two men in the bin. So there was a massive overlap anyway, but half of both teams had stopped. So you can kind of forgive the director or cameraman for
James
for
O'Connor
that.
Did score, gave a big... he's captain of the Reds. He's fly half.
And captain of the Reds, coached by Brad Thorne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is a pretty straight shooter from everything 100%. I've ever seen of Brad Thorne.
You know, another... Another testament to save your world, perhaps.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe.
Are you in their pocket, Tim? No. Or are they in your pocket?
They've got a lot of airtime.
Yeah, they have. So let's move on to the other Super Rugby, just very briefly. Crusaders, again, won. Too boring, too predictable.
I've got to say, Razor's breakdancing is getting worse. He's getting older, to be fair, but...
It's going to be interesting to see how many more years he can keep this up.
Yeah, he was a bit slower on this one.
But the confidence of the man to do that. I mean, I wouldn't do that, no matter what I've won.
Yeah, fair play for even doing it.
It's so New Zealand, though, isn't it?
It is.
So New Zealand. It's just slightly dated.
It's right up there. Super Rugby NZ, where one team has lumberjack shirts as their team garb. And another team has a coach that does breakdancing.
And it wouldn't be...
A middle-aged white man that does breakdancing.
It wouldn't be Super Rugby as well if... or New Zealand Super Rugby, if one of the teams didn't get a load of negative press coverage for having a few beers afterwards.
Of course not. They're so pious over there, aren't they?
So the Chiefs had a few pints to wind down and finish their season, and there's been some negative headlines.
Mm. Standard.
I hope the boys play.
I hope they had a good few Negronis.
I agree. I'll say. So many comments about your hair, Phil. RN Porter. I see Phil has progressed from Nicola Sturgeon to Hamish Watson. Solid look.
That's very Hamish.
Yeah.
I like to think I'm more kind of Paolo Maldini, France 98.
Oh, nice. I can see that.
Yeah. And Paul Millam, friend of the pod, Paul Millam. Says, Phil is a little too close to being able to embark on a Michael Ball tribute act. Or... Not sure this thing is acceptable anymore. Right.
Soon, it's coming off soon.
Actually, because Paul has been on some Tier 2 tours, let me just mention at this point...
Well done, Tim.
Let me just mention that we have a live show. We said, you know, a few months ago when we launched the Patreon thing and when we talked about our plans for the future, we said we want live shows, not just abroad, but we want them in the UK too. We want them on match days at Premiership grounds. We want them all over the place. We want to get out and see as many, the whites of people's eyes as much as possible, because the last year or so has just shown how much we miss that. Rugby clubs. We want to get to rugby clubs. We want to get to live shows. We want to get to Premiership grounds. So we're going to do all of that with your support and with your help. And the first live show is going to be on Saturday the
24th
the 24th of July.
25th
of July. The weekend of the 23rd, 4th and 5th of July.
There we go. North Dorset Sevens. There's too much rugby in Dorset for a whole of Dorset Sevens, so they had to divide up the county.
Well, we had to pick. South Dorset were desperate for us. And North Dorset, we had to make a choice. We've gone with North Dorset, the lovely town of Gillingham in North Dorset there. Mm. And we're going to be at their Sevens tournament. We're going to be entering a team. For which we are.
Oh, by the way, we've already got one candidate. One candidate email us to get on the scene.
Oh yeah, there's
can I be DOR of this? I feel like that's my
there's more actually.
Player/DOR. Oh no, what do you say? Rugby director, you prefer RD?
Yeah, rugby director, not director of rugby. That's ridiculous.
Rugby director.
Rugby director. Do I wear a suit for it? That's the question. That is the question. Is it a globally important role? Which rugby director should I mirror myself on?
Well, I reckon if we do it, what you should do.
If I'm pretending to be a DOR, it should be Stuart Hooper.
If you're a DOR, we should film our games with you giving a running commentary of what's going on and what you would do and
things. I also coaching points. I also want to play. I also want to play. Oh, and I know nothing about sevens.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you could do a six plus one lineout, couldn't we?
There is a we are all vets. There is a vets tens tournament.
Yeah, well, why aren't we doing that?
I know more about tens than
why
I know
aren't
about
we doing
sevens.
Vets tens? We could clean up on that. Let's do that.
I think we do pretty well at vets.
Do the vets tens? Is there a vets tens?
There is a vets tens.
Right, we're doing vets tens, not
sevens. We're doing vets tens, right, there we go.
We don't want to play against loads of 21-year-old sprinters.
Hey, we might be able to get in
some... That'd be humiliating.
Some ringers.
That'd be humiliating, JB.
Yeah, I'm not sure we want to compete in the men's elite tournament.
No.
Why?
It might not be much fun.
We'll work this out. The point being, that weekend, 23rd, 4th July, we will be at the North Dorset Sevens. If you're anywhere nearby or you're a little further afield and you fancy making a weekend of it with a bunch of mates from your rugby club and coming down and playing, that'd be awesome. We are looking to recruit talent for our Egg Chasers
team. But I don't know how
we do it.
I don't want to just accept the first like five lads that say we'll play, because what if they're not any good?
Send a highlight reel, CV.
Yeah,
get your agent in touch with us.
Like, hi, I'm really good at rugby. I didn't believe you. Send me some evidence.
contact. Well, just let us know who you play for, what your level is. But it's also, you know, we're looking for characters too, aren't we?
Yeah. So.
contactegchasers@gmail.com. You can get in touch with us there. All the details, if they're not already, will be on our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/eggchasers. And it's there, by the way, where one of the little perks we save for supporting us on Patreon is that you get priority access to live tickets. This, the first of many. So there you go.
I might do a video this week outlining all the things. I can't be bothered writing it down.
Yeah, okay,
and then I'll throw it up on the Patreon and then you'll know.
And keep an eye on Twitter and stuff. But nature is healing. Not only are rugby clubs opening up again, but rugby tournaments are going to be happening. And in July, at the end of July, which is a Lions weekend, by the way, there's going to be a whole load of people descending on one club for a big old weekend of rugby, socialising, Lions, and an Egg Chasers live pod.
Wonderful.
We're very much looking forward to.
Cannot wait.
Excellent.
Anyone watch any rugby this weekend?
Loads.
Yes.
Loads. Yeah. I love the terrible weather. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? I went to a game.
Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, Friday Night Lights. Awesome, as usual. I've seen 19 minutes of Newcastle.
Yeah.
Precisely 19 minutes, no more, no less.
From when friend of the pod, Carl Ferns, came on for his debut.
Literally.
Debut.
Went on to rugby, what's the app? Rugby.
Ultimate Rugby.
Ultimate Rugby. Found out the minute that he came on. Went on to BBC Sport app, got to that minute and just watched it. 8 carries in 19 minutes is bloody good shift.
He's massive.
He's a big boy moment. Very, very
big. He's got so much bigger. Sod it. I'm on a podcast with you. I'm not going to sound like a name dropper. he and my brother played together at Sale, and so I used to go and play golf with them quite a lot. The two of them, they go and play golf, and he was big then, but he's gone away to France and come back. Oh my goodness, he's an absolute giant.
Yeah, nearly for a try as well.
He's a silverback.
Yeah, as David Flatman calls him, animal strong.
Yeah. Freak.
So watch that. Obviously watch Harlequins until I thought Harlequins were going to lose and then I disappeared. I watched the end of that. Brilliant.
Another last minute Magic Marcus try.
Yeah, I watched something else as well. What games yesterday? All emergence. Bath. Of course I watched Bath. Why would I not watch Bath?
Did you watch Northampton Gloucester?
I didn't.
Oh my God. Northampton. So I mean, say, Northampton, you were competing for top four.
Well, just because it's not fair on Newcastle, before we move on, they played so well, by the way.
They have it in them.
They look really good. It's finally, they've had, six or seven defeats in a row, and someone was going to get it, and London Irish got it, and Newcastle looked ace. And they were offloading, they were flooding through support channels. They looked hard up front.
They've always looked pretty hard up front.
So I was talking to some rugby luminary this week, and we were discussing the England team, and hypothetically, if Eddie went, who would you replace him with? And I would say...
Dean Richards,
and just take his whole stuff from Newcastle. I think they're really good. I mean, you probably would, wouldn't you?
Baxter, if he wanted it, would be a fair shout.
I think he'd be mad to take it.
I'm not sure he would, but I think Baxter would be first cab off the rank for me. If he wanted it, if he can get the right fit, agreed.
Mm.
But yeah, Dean Richards. I mean, I can never see it happening because of Bloodgate.
Yeah, that's exactly the feedback that I had.
But I do like him. Kind of always liked him.
Yeah, I mean, he could do work. I mean, just as a figurehead, he knows what he's doing, and then you can surround him with Lee Blackett or a Vesty or whoever the defensive guy is at that time who likes Wolves. All that stuff can just come together. I'm just going to go off on a tangent thinking about Eddie a second. One of the things I don't like is that you have to play in England to play for England.
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily need to coach in England to coach England. And I think there should be at least a portion of your coaching staff which are almost selected. So the RFU should just say, we want Paul Deacon and we want whoever else it is.
But the question is, why are players only allowed to play for England if they play in England?
Because the best talent will leave, right?
Yeah, and why is that important?
Strength of the league.
Strength of the league. So it's all about the generating... I mean, I agree with you. For what it's worth, I totally agree. I think, like football, I don't like project players. I don't like players coming in and qualifying on residency after 3 years. And I think if you're English or whatever, Welsh, New Zealand, you should be able to play for your country wherever you apply your club trade. But the reason they've done it is to protect strength of the league as as a commercial entity. So it's about cash.
I think like Eddie's still the top man, but he takes Paul Deacon for a year and then sends him back, and then the RFU just pay. Because of course, when Paul Deacon goes, someone else is going to.
They do that with the under 20s, though, don't they?
Yes. Do they? Yes.
Yeah, they're not full time rules, are they? Yeah,
because Eddie, what he likes allegedly is to keep it fresh continuously. That's why he's always rotating those
coaches.
So if you're going to do that, I think it'd be a good thing to be doing it from
the clubs.
Yeah, from the clubs.
Yeah, I don't hate that idea at all.
The clubs might not. I mean, that might be something that would be offered, but the clubs don't go for it. Who knows?
The clubs might hate it. But I think there is a benefit.
There's a benefit to both sides there.
Yeah.
If you get someone back after having 12 months experience working with the best players and the best coaches.
And it's actually yet to be seen if the coaches who have been to England come back as better coaches. You would say Hatley's performance at the moment isn't great at Bath for various reasons. Borthwick is doing very well, but it's not finished.
Yeah, Borthwick is very positive so far.
Gustard.
Nope.
And what's the other one? We missed someone.
Who's on a journey?
Might be another one. But they're all going to England.
Lots of people
back.
On journeys at the moment.
Yeah, lots of people on journeys. That's important.
Yeah. When Eddie was selected, the RFU kind of set a couple of parameters for that appointment, one of which was needs international experience, which pretty much ruled out every England coach other than, I don't know, Brian Ashton, Clive Woodward, or the three guys they've just fired. So it's like, who are you going to go for?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you a story about an international coach when we talk about Sale Sharks later. Okay.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about the game today, though, because that was absolutely bonkers.
And there was a break in play after 48 seconds.
Wasps v Harlequins, by the way.
Yes.
Or Harlequins v Wasps.
Harlequins Wasps. Break in play after 48 seconds. At that point, there'd already been two knock-ons, turnovers, and an interception in 48 seconds.
Madness.
Right. I know how these teams are going to play. This is going to be good fun.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of people that have gone, see, ring fencing isn't so bad. Look at this game. But it's hold on. Quins are trying to get in the top four. They're not playing like that because there's no relegation. They're trying to get into the playoffs. And Wasps also aren't thinking, oh, we could get sucked into a, oh, we're clear of relegation. Therefore, this is just how they play.
And
this is how they played last year and the year before. Actually, not so much in Quins' case. That's what's been great about Quins.
There's that side. And I've seen other games that have been heralded as, this is why relegation doesn't matter. Like the Newcastle-Irish game, which I've not seen a huge amount, but just the scoreline suggests both teams were...
High numbers don't mean high quality. High numbers don't mean high quality.
Yeah, that's exactly,
exactly
right.
It's JB's mackerel fishing analogy. Or the sevens, when there's 100 tries in a day, each one matters a whole lot less. So each one is less relevant, therefore is less important as a spectacle.
This one was a spectacle, and it was played like that, not because it was loose for any other reason than that's how these two sides play every game at the minute.
Yes.
And it was fun to watch.
Yes.
As a result.
It was. I'm glad I'm not a Quins fan, because Quins had something on the line.
Yeah.
They were 12 points down at one point with, I don't know, 20 minutes left, and Mike Brown red carded, and they came back to win it.
Again!
Again, with a Magic Marcus try in the last second.
Magic Marcus try again.
What on earth, right, was Lee Blackett telling his players this week? This is on the lines of like, if we score 46 points, I think we're home and dry. Aim for 46 points and we'll definitely beat Harlequins.
And Wasps have been edged out in a few tight games like this. Just as Quins have come through men down with some very late scores.
And Wasps were winning games, not necessarily near 100 point games, but they were winning the arm wrestle games last season.
Yeah.
And this season they're just not falling on the right side of it for for various reasons.
Tell you what, I really think Quins have got away with one here. I mean,
time. Anyone who watched the game thought that. How Wasps didn't close that out?
They've actually got away with two.
London Irish.
Well, no, sorry, two in this game.
Oh, right.
In this game week, because Northampton.
That's exactly it.
Ruined, Northampton were awful.
They were dreadful.
Against
Northampton, all they have to do is get their act together. Beat Gloucester.
Third from bottom of the league.
They look beatable to me. I mean, they're not the best in the league, are they?
All season, they are a beatable team.
They do what they do, and then Northampton obviously throw it away. For Harlequins, here was my prediction this week.
Gloucester fans would take umbrage with saying Northampton threw it away. Like
Gloucester did play very well.
They did play very well.
I'm sure. Yeah.
And much better than they have done.
And in Northampton's defence, losing Dan Bigger to HIA,
that was big.
Which hopefully is okay. Chris Boyd said he had no symptoms after the game, but you never know with that kind of thing.
Well, Harlequins, where I think they've dodged the bullet is obviously... because it looks very unlikely Saints can catch them now. Not impossible. The Harlequins have got some
tough-ish
games.
Yeah.
They're going to lose against Sale, I would suggest. And the reason I think they're going to lose is because this is a team based on continuity. And they've been able to put out a similar side week in, week out. Well, Will Evans goes down. Esther Hazen's banned. Then Mike Brown's get banned. I mean, if you've got a core of, say, six or seven really good lads, and that's who's pulling the strings, that's great. But to be losing three of them is a big deal. Now, the guys who came in and replaced those fellas are fine, but you can't just carry on chipping away week after week. It's almost like they've got this amazing asset in Marcus Smith, and every week they want to test him a little bit more to see see at what point he's not going to come through.
The guy is unreal.
He is unreal.
He's so good.
In terms of individual performances, this season he's had some incredible ones. Today was just insane. The way he reads the game, the way he sees the game. Oh, it's just, it's outrageous.
And I said it after the Six Nations, but based on Eddie's comments after the Six Nations, I think we will see him in an England jersey.
Yeah.
I think definitely he will tour this summer, but I think he will not only tour this summer, I think we will see him in future squads as well.
Yeah.
So if I'm a Harlequins fan, I'm not particularly happy about this game though. I mean, I'm not happy about the last game either. And I'm not happy about when Marcus Smith scores. Because every time they get someone banned and Marcus Smith still comes through and he still wins you a game, that's like how many extra thousands on his next contract?
He's just signed a long-term deal, hasn't he? They've just tied him in. Yeah.
When did they get him? They got him at the start of the season.
Yeah.
They got him.
Thank God.
Just after Gustard went.
Yeah. I wonder if there was any.
That's right.
They bought low.
It was January.
Quins were losing everything at that point.
Yeah. I remember singing their praises for managing to get that deal done and losing a DOR. I thought it was incredible.
It's a hell of a deal. And every game, it looks like a better deal.
Yeah. When that deal comes up for renegotiation, they better have their checkbooks out.
Yeah.
I mean, they might need, this is not a joke, they might need a sponsor just for that one player.
Can you, if it's an academy player, you can put them in as a marquee.
So they've got to have been with your team for 3 years before that, and they can be a marquee player.
So he'll be a marquee.
There'll be no problem.
He's 100% marquee.
So he's staying, and they'll find the cash. Really.
Literally.
If there is still marquee players at that point in time.
Yeah, true.
I've got to think there's going to be one, because this is exactly the scenario that you've designed the marquee rule for.
Well, it's either this or bringing in Semi Randrandra or Sir Charles Pieto.
Yeah, yeah. He's going to be the... I don't know who would be higher paid if they were completely open market today, whether it be a Toji or it'd be Marcus Smith.
If they went to, say, France or Japan, or there was no restrictions in the Prem, but...
Well, just say, yeah, because they couldn't be marquee players, could they?
They couldn't be marquee players.
If every player was available suddenly and Premiership clubs had a draft, where would Marcus Smith get drafted? What number would Marcus Smith get drafted?
One. There's these young...
It'd be tough. You might go Semi or Sir Charles.
They're both late 20s. And they're in positions that are historically less well paid.
Yeah. He's young, most important position. and he's English.
He might go number one.
He may well.
I can't see why he wouldn't.
I mean, there's other players who are more recognisable on the global stage, but
I meant if you took all Premiership players that are currently playing in the Premiership, just put them into a draft system and clubs could just pick.
Yeah,
I reckon.
I mean, he might be the best fly half, just outright. Just no caveats. No, despite his age, he might just be the best fly half in the Prem.
Yeah,
you can make that argument. Now, if you're adding on all the caveats, like he's young. You know, he can do certain things which other people can't, then it just becomes a no-brainer.
That's why I'd prefer to just look at him and try and judge it without the age as a factor, because quite often
you could redraft your whole team every year, quite so often it's just a one-year thing.
Yeah, well, quite often people undervalue players because of an age is higher, because you're not actually buying the potential improvement in a player.
That was one of the Moneyball things.
Yeah.
If you just knew it's one season and your whole team disbands, so age didn't play a part in it, I still think he probably goes top five.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Definite top five.
He is class.
He really is.
I bet Harlequins can't wait to lose him to Saracens.
Oh, what?
Saracens get promoted. Need
a replacement for
Owen
Farrell.
I felt so sorry for Wasps. They played really well. Dan Robson was awesome.
Dan Robson was class. I love it. Didn't always work amazingly, but I love that centre combination of Fekitoa and Odogwu.
How can you not like that?
That is box office, just exciting. Bassett he's such a good kind of
Bassett
finisher.
Really come on this year. I mean, he was very good under Dai Young with all the superstars around him. You think, is he just good because he's playing in the team of superstars?
I don't think he's come on. I think this is how Josh Bassett's been played for about 5 or 6 years.
He's such a good finisher.
Not in my mind, at least. I think he's. I think he had a dip after all the superstars left. Why wouldn't you?
I think Bassett, he's just that dependable. He knows his way to the try line, but he knows how to read.
Perfect Premiership player, just below international level, but absolutely consistently awesome.
Yeah. Great game. For the neutral.
Get out of jail free. How many get out of jail free cards have Quinn's got, though? I mean, like you say, I think that says everything about the top 2 inches and what a massive difference it can make. You have an 80-minute ding-dong and just that slight bit of resilience and belief.
But do you know who they've got next?
Quinn's.
Yeah. Leicester.
Yeah, I'm working that.
Oh,
game,
are
actually.
You?
Yeah.
Nice.
Look forward to that one.
Leicester are no mugs. They are no mugs. And a weakened Quinn side. And all it takes is an injury midweek, or something's happened for yet another star to go down. And I mean, I think they're going to be really, really pushed. Then they've got Bath. Who knows?
It doesn't, because they won that. That's why this game and the London Irish coming through and winning at the end is so important. Because now they've got, 9-point cushion?
Yeah, they have 9 points.
So they've got 4 games left. They can lose at least 2 games and still make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's kind of
you're right.
So it's kind of
because the Northampton Saints have got.
That's why today was so big, and the game against London Irish.
Yeah. God damn.
Yeah.
Good game.
So you were at a game on Friday, Jay?
Yeah, it was great fun.
Do you feel like you got your finger on the temperature after that game?
I do feel like I've got my finger on the temperature, as a famous rugby journalist once said. Yeah, I had a phenomenal time. So obviously the rugby was great. I'm going to tell you a story now, because I like the story. So I was sat there, and Matt Postlethwaite, one of Sale Sharks'
youngsters,
showed up. I said hello to him, because obviously I've seen him around quite a bit. I was asking how he's
And you're kind of a big deal, Jay.
Well, yeah. and I was like, asking how he was, just saying, you know, he's going to go out on loan because he's been injured. Is he going to go get some match fitness elsewhere? I said to him, like, do you ever want to play for England? And he goes, yeah, obviously. Well, if you do, like, just look ahead, look in front of us. There's, like, Eddie, and there's Matt Proudfoot. Like, literally, as far as you two are. And I said, well, why don't you just say hello to him? I mean, it's a pretty good excuse to say hello to the England coach. They literally know all the information that you need to know of how to get in the England squad, so go and say hello. And he's like, no, don't want to do that. And I just found it absolutely baffling in a sport which is all about, say, confidence and bravado, and there's a lot of image out there, and you want confident young men who, will take responsibility, why players do not just pick up the phone who are not in Eddie's mind and say, hey, Eddie, I'm around. If you're watching Sale, I'm around. Can we have 5 minutes? Can we have a coffee? Can I go meet Matt Proudfoot? Can I do something? Anyway, he's like, no, don't. But fine, I'll do it then. So I said hello to Matt Proudfoot, and he came over to have a chat. Matt Proudfoot.
While Matt Postlethwaite was still there?
Yeah.
Do you say, Matt, this is Matt?
That's exactly how it worked. I said, yeah, Matt plays second row here. Very, very good line-out caller. You want to be having a look. And I really like Matt Proudfoot, based on nothing more than this, which is he loves rugby. And that's a strange thing to say about a rugby coach, but he loves talking rugby. And I can appreciate that all day long. And he particularly loves talking about back rows and abrasive forwards. So we had a good chat about... Well, I won't tell you what he told me, but I'll tell you what I told him. So I immediately wanted to bring his attention to Curtis Langdon, who I think is absolutely brilliant.
He's not dual qualified, is he?
I didn't want to get into that. I didn't want to get into that. I was just enjoying listening to the England scrum coach and his opinions on which players are abrasive, which ones he likes, what he's looking for, all that kind of stuff. So just a really, I liked him because it was like talking to someone at your club who's got loads and loads of knowledge.
Yeah.
And if you can get in front of someone, I genuinely believe it is mad that players do not just phone these guys up and say, what is it you want? Because he might turn around, and this is completely anecdotal, he might turn around to the young second row who came and said, oh, hi, I'm such and such. That's him on his radar then.
I understand what you're saying. It's you're very unusual.
But that's what you should do.
And I admire it. I genuinely admire it in you, your ability to just go and speak to anybody, and you quite often feel like, oh no, I'm gonna little voices in your head start going. And even me, I work in broadcasting, and
he's gonna hate you, know, you. He's gonna hate you.
Yeah, oh, he's just, oh no, I
don't want to trouble him.
He's busy, maybe, don't want to trouble him and all of that. And bearing in mind, you know, I'll sit in a room Monday to Friday talking into a microphone, and you know, lots and lots of people are listening, and yet I'm going, oh no, I can't pick up the phone. And the few times I've actually forced myself to do it and actually gone, no, get over yourself, Tim. 5 seconds of courage, hit dial on that phone number.
Exactly, that's all you got to do.
It does pay off.
All you got to do is that
it does pay
and
off.
From a young player's point of view, maybe for instance, the second row I was with wasn't quite big enough to be a second row, and you say, oh, yeah, you're not big enough to be a second row. Well, you got that information then? Yeah, well, I'm not big enough to be an England second row, but I am big enough to be an England six, or I am, you know, whatever it is. I just don't know why there's not a little bit more communication about what they're after, because that would stick in your mind if you were a coach, if a young lad said... And
I think it would.
Coaches also want to know that you want to play for them. If someone came up to me and said, I would love to play for you, what are you looking for, what do you want me to work on, it makes sense.
Would you fancy playing for England?
Yeah, definitely. Did you ask for Winions last week?
Did you not ask what can you do?
Yeah, I would do anything for them. So yeah, just give me a job, I'll be fine.
Owen O'Leary on the live chat says, in fairness, Quinns did blow the Bears game and the Chiefs game. That's a good point.
That is
actually
a good point.
That is a good point. So swings and roundabouts, they haven't just been playing get out of jail free cards.
It's a great point.
And those are the two teams they're going to have to step up and beat in a
one or both of them.
One or both of them. Kaka Banana says, take your shoes off and zoom in.
Sicko.
Michael Lambert Griffiths, could we use the county system ever again? I saw this in the rugby paper today, actually.
I hope so. Hang on, for what?
I saw this in the rugby paper today saying that the county system being reintroduced and reinvigorated could be a key part of the game moving forward.
100%.
As the pinnacle for amateur-level rugby.
100% it should be. I could not agree with that more. I think it's the most... I mean, I'd be genuinely excited to see a good Lancashire team. I mean, actually, Lancashire is a good team, so yeah, I don't know why I'm saying that.
Lancashire's always a good team. Cornwall, Devon are always great teams. Surrey's always good.
Yeah, Yorkshire traditionally Yorkshire was very
as well,
good.
Yeah.
I mean, again, if we regionalised, which I know you don't delight in, but regionalised the championship and we made the counties a little
Not
bit
the
more...
championship, I go below the championship, but yes, I'm totally on board with the principle. Whatever. As someone who spent many, many years driving from Manchester to Redruth or Newbury to Wharfdale, I'm totally on board with regionalising it, but yeah.
So what was the other thing I was going to say on that? Counties. The other part of the county as well, I like when they did, so Lancashire had the Fusiliers. I don't know what happened to them. I think obviously COVID might have killed them off at some point, but it's the Lancashire team for level 5 and under.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's a cool idea.
That was
as well.
A relatively new thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, but you've got to have the clubs bought into it. Because if one club sends all of their lads to trials, well, all those lads go in. I didn't even know when the trials were, so we didn't send anyone from TOC. Yep. But, you know, we would happily do so. So it's just a little bit more about the communication. But if they got that right, there's no reason why it's not a really good competition.
That'd be great fun. Yep.
Message here just says, bang on your conversation, by the way. My son played his first senior game for Aylesbury Rugby Club on Saturday. The first question he asked the coach when he came off the pitch was, what do I need to work on?
Mm. There we go.
Love it.
That's it.
Love it.
Absolutely.
As for the game.
Yes.
So there was a game of rugby played. I felt Sale Sharks got lucky in lots of ways. They were nowhere near clinical enough.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. I couldn't, watching the game, I couldn't decide whether to attribute that to Sale just being a bit rusty and clunky kind of going forward, or a really fairly second string Leicester being really well drilled and kind of difficult to break down in defence.
Yeah. Now, I'm certain that this problem that they have is a problem which is almost like perfectly designed for Sanderson to fix. And what I mean by that is, Sale play their best rugby when they've got, like, they're down to 13 men or 14 men. It's just what they like to do. And were they down to 13 on the weekend? I think they might have gone down to 13 at one point. They're definitely down to 14. And they definitely had two yellow cards.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. The team, when it goes out, the full-strength first team seem to play within themselves. They don't seem to finish very well. They don't seem to be very clinical. They're going on to 14 or 13 and they come alive. So that actually, after me mocking all the psychological nonsense, that clearly must be a psychological thing.
Yeah, I think you do. You see the boost in teams. Everyone does work that bit harder for those 10 minutes. Yeah. Now, the earlier that happens, the more energy you take out over that period, therefore the less you have left in the tank for later in the game. But yeah, I totally agree. There is a bounce.
They should have been up by about 30 points by half-time. And the fact that Leicester, I mean, Leicester are a smart team. The best thing about Leicester is that they learn. They learn on the fly, I feel. So you saw it with Ulster. They're getting battered, and they think, oh, actually, we need to tweak this, tweak that. And then before you know it, they're coming back into the game. They are quite physical too. If they'd have scored the try in the corner, which was disallowed, I can't remember who scored it, but someone went in the corner.
It was Murimurivalu.
It's like a double movement. I don't know what.
Yeah.
I don't know why they called it back, because I wasn't watching the TV. But that goes over. And then the next try, it's 19-17, which is a completely different game. And I think that try not going over pretty much killed them off. And then obviously Sale Sharks going down to 14 meant that they actually played well. But there's something about when they play their first team, they're not so, I don't know, they're not so sharp. Another thing which is really interesting about this is, do you notice how strong the Sale Sharks team was?
It was a lot stronger than the Leicester team.
It's got AJ in. What more do you need?
It's got AJ, yeah. Perfect.
It's got Lyon, Tom Curry. It's got a few South Africa players in.
So my theory on this going into it is, Sale, where Samson's made his big difference to the team, is not at the top end. I don't think Faf de Klerk is playing any better. In fact, he might be worse.
He had a good game on Friday compared to where he has been at.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think the Prees are playing better. They might be playing worse. But where he's made a big difference is lower down the team. You've got lads contributing now who didn't used to contribute so much. Cam Neill, Doug Dales, got all these young kids coming through. James Harper came on scrimmage as well. He's done a really good job of not so much focusing on the top-end talent, because they're, even if they're 5% worse, they're still very, very good. It doesn't matter. But getting everyone to contribute. Mm.
So we can get rid of the Saffers and get loads of Northerners in?
Who knows?
That'd be my guess.
One day.
Tommy Taylor's coming back, for example.
Yeah, it's a nice little signing, that. So, I was surprised they put out their first team, because I thought they'd quite fancy dealing with Leicester with a slightly rotated team. I actually think, in reality, looking at it again, is they needed those points, because next up it's Bristol, it's Exeter, it's Quins, and then one other. And you can see there's potential there to lose a few games.
And they, because of that win, they briefly leapfrogged Exeter, so they were sitting in second place as Exeter played.
Yeah.
And when Exeter went 10 points down against Worcester, say who were looking pretty for second place.
Yes.
Which, if you're second or third place, it doesn't really matter, because you've still got to beat the best two teams in the league.
Yeah.
You've still got to beat Exeter, and you're going to have to beat Bristol.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's exactly what they're up to. The fact that they didn't kill off Leicester much earlier is a little bit of lack of them being clinical, but huge credit to Leicester. I mean, I do honestly think they're really good, and
they're so well drilled and so difficult to break down. Even when this is a total B team.
Yeah,
this is totally. Well, I was going to say other than Ben Youngs, but maybe yes, including Ben Youngs B team.
Yeah, they just know what they're doing, and they're going to strengthen in summer. Nothing's been announced yet, but I think they're going to bring in a few good players, to put it mildly. Mm. And they've got the money to do so. They've got the cap room to do so.
Yeah.
They've got systems and the processes ready to go. They're in a bloody good position. So, yeah, it was a handy win. It could have been better for Sale.
Other games? Bath?
Yeah.
Go 15 points up?
Obviously, standard. Yeah. This is becoming. I mean, people are making a lot of money off this.
Did you put a bet on?
Yeah.
How much did you put on?
£8.
Only £8.
Yeah.
Because I would have given you 10-1 on that. Even at 15-0 down, Bristol are going to win that game.
Yeah.
So you'd want to put on a lot of money to make some money.
Just on this one, I've suddenly just looked and gone. Because Bath are now looking down the table and are in a fight to keep one of those top eight spots. The fact that the Champions Cup got moved to 8 points,
eighth place,
that's probably a bigger part of the reason why teams like Gloucester and Newcastle, people are going, oh, ring fencing, oh, look, Gloucester and Newcastle. It's actually because they've now got a carrot to look up the table.
Because everyone other than Worcester can still get.
Yeah, 100%.
Top eight.
So the second that the Champions Cup was changed to the top eight, that would have been the easiest team talk for George Skivington and Dean Richards to go, right, come on, boys, 5 games, we could be at the top table. Let's do this.
Mm.
So anyway.
Genuine question now. With Bath losing however many that have lost, 10 games in the season,
yeah.
How long can this continue? How long can this...
Context is massive in this one. Look, right, so as we've said, I'm not trying to say Bath aren't playing poorly, aren't playing below where the talent should be, etc., etc., etc. The massive caveat there is Northampton got absolutely panned when their fly half goes off. Bath have been playing with a kid at fly half for a while. Add to that what we've said so many times, so I'm not going to go into it in great depth. The context in this whole season, you can't look back and go, oh, 8 wins and 10 losses. Well, look at the players in their squad. Many of which weren't available to them for the majority of those 18 games.
But their best players are available to them.
No, they're not.
No, I say their best
players. Taulupe Faletau.
Not their best player in a Bath shirt.
Oh,
I mean, the way
come on.
I mean, I thought Miles Reed this game was very good.
Miles Reed
he's
was good.
He's playing better
just
Miles Reed than
has,
their big names.
Just because Miles Reed has a good season. Well, Taulupe Faletau is not their best back row player. Yes, he is.
No.
Taulupe Faletau and Sam Underhill.
I think people who've done really well for them this year.
Because they've been playing.
People have done really well this year are the lads which have had that they've had to rely on. When they rotate the team heavily, they tend to do even worse. This is their problem. You say that they're not available. Don't bloody pay them then. Don't bring them into the team. This is the problem.
And this is the problem that we've discussed for
many times.
10 out of the last 18 weeks.
Yeah, and I hate that. And
they are rubbish.
Just to make the point again, I absolutely hate the fact that it is not in any club's interest to have an England international in their ranks, except for if they've managed to assemble a squad that can get them to the playoffs. And then it's useful. On average, it's a net negative because it takes up a disproportionately large amount of cap space and it hampers your ability to achieve through the season. Bath have been uniquely, over and above pretty much any other team in the league, have been uniquely hampered. Maybe Exeter are the only other side that was close.
They've been uniquely stupid. That's what they've been. So, like, they knew that Taulupe Faletau was an international.
I know.
They already knew they had.
This season
is unique, and this is what I'm saying. This season, where there are no break weeks, and the league runs through the Autumn Nations Cup, the league runs through the Six Nations, where there's no Premiership Cup. There's no Premiership Cup. There's no break weeks. It's intensified what was already an issue. So you can say it's stupid, but Bath kept Taulupe Faletau on the basis of a normal season where he would miss 6 Premiership games, 7 Premiership games, not 11 or 12 Premiership games. And when you add that to all the players they have, it makes it magnifies the issue. So just saying Bath are stupid to have kept them. Next season, it'll be different again. Should they have ditched Anthony Watson because this year is tough when they'll still have him next year?
Should they have ditched Anthony Watson? Yes. Yes, they should. Okay. Because they've got so much money.
I'm not sure Bath fans would agree with you that they should have... They should have ditched Faletau, Underhill, Watson...
I wouldn't worry.
...and all those players for this year.
I wouldn't worry about ditching Anthony Watson, because I think if this continues, he's not going to want to waste his career there. He will not want to waste his career under Stuart Hooper doing what he's doing. There is very little, from what I can see, there's very little shape, there's very little structure. They work hard, the players don't mind colliding. But anyone that is paying any attention to Bath knows that this is massively substandard. And the fact that they go up every game tells you a lot about, you know, the endeavour, and they can make opportunities and they can play. And then they fall to pieces. And I don't think that there's enough accountability within the squad, because I don't think Stuart Hooper holds them accountable. I think they're so busy talking inwardly with this robotic style. I'll give you the example. When Josh McNally was saying that we were coaching, the senior players were too busy coaching their way through. They are so uniformed, I don't think anyone is actually challenging them to say that this is not good enough. They need a complete change of mindset.
So there were two teams in this game. We've spoken about Bath, and most of it has been the same as what we've spoken about for most of the preceding 18 weeks.
I love you, Phil.
But Bristol played a game as well in this. And Bristol were awesome.
They were absolutely brilliant.
Bristol, awesome. Besides, so I say they were awesome. They struggled in the first half. The errors that forced those two first Bath tries, and Bristol turned it around in the second half. Bristol's second half performance was awesome.
It was outstanding.
And the thing about Bristol is, you look at them and you never lost the faith that they know exactly what they're doing.
100%. And we've seen that before, time and time again.
You're just like, they're still doing things. They still trust themselves. They still trust their mates.
Yeah.
Bath, on the other hand, is complete and utter panic. And that is the difference in coaching. Is the difference.
And I said it before, but when Bath went up, 15 points to nil up, and you knew that Bristol were going to win that. I had no doubt in my mind. And not only did Bristol win, but Bristol... they scored 28 unanswered points after going 15-0 down.
They are ridiculous. They've scored over 90 points against Bath this season. It's a record win at the rec.
I love the way they did it as well. The Max Melling, was it his first try? Just the break off a scrum.
In the 22.
Which was just off a scrum blindside.
Piatal, simple thing, run hard. At a gap, attract two defenders, give the ball, try.
And it was so simple. It was so simple, but because Piatau and... So, you're in for the pass, but then Piatau and Randranda are running very hard, unders lines, fixing defenders with perfect passing. It's so simple, it looks so simple, but it's so difficult to execute that skill at that speed to score that try. That was brilliant. Absolutely superb. And that's, even though it's so simple, it's so difficult to defend. Because, I mean, it was Anthony Watson marking Malins, and the pace gives Malins the room outside Watson.
Yeah, it was the try they didn't score, which I thought was best.
Which one was that?
When Moynihan knocks it on.
Oh, yeah.
That was just superb. Yeah. Offload, then crossfield kick.
Sadly, and it gets brought back for the...
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the Nathan Hughes one, wasn't it?
Yeah, Bristol. I wonder if they'll transition from being super flashy into something a little bit more concrete. Because when it comes up, I guess they're going to have Exeter in the final. And that's going to be their test. I think at the moment they're capable of beating anyone in the style that they do.
Behind the scrum, I'd think absolutely not. They won't. And it's just that the front five, they need to match up.
Did either of you notice, which is something I do... I never noticed it, and now I always notice it when it's happening, which is on a couple of the dominant scrums for Bristol. Luatua was binding on the loose head. Luatua had shifted up. So
as in the four-man front row trick.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There was two where it was like so noticeable. In fact, when the scrum kind of half collapsed, I was certain Luatua was playing prop. yeah. because of the position that he was in.
Oh, he can reach the bathroom
rope. Peter Ormoni does it superbly well.
Peter Ormoni's ace at it. But it's just a that's like a street smart. If you can get away with it,
oh,
if you can do it, you do it.
We're talking about the street smart. Pat Lam is satisfied. He's got clarity on the whole latching situation, and you are allowed to tackle the latcher on a player that's picking and going.
I mean, that sounds like a unsatisfactory solution.
Well,
to
no, because it's what happened.
Just stop.
When a player is, you do a pick and go from a ruck, and you have the support player who just binds onto
pre-bound or
you're not allowed to pre-bind, but as soon as they pick it up, you can bind on and you can sort of like Dave. How many tries would Sam Simmons have scored had Dave Ewers not been there to walk him over the line?
By pre-bound, I mean before contact.
Yeah, before contact or yes. at the point of contact.
You
or
can
whatever.
Really throw someone over a line. Like if I'm looking at a ball, I'm thinking, am I going to pick that up? No, I'm not. Come here. You can get someone else.
I think part of it is the player physically helps them over the line, and part of it just makes it more awkward to tackle.
Well, because they're low. I think it depends. The Premiership do it different to level 8. You wouldn't be surprised by that. The Premiership, I mean, what they do is a nightmare because you have the guy on the outside, then you have the guy on the inside. Yeah. So you've got a 3-man wedge, and like when they execute it properly, I'm amazed anyone stops it. I really am.
Well, you can't wrap the ball carrier in a tackle.
At level 7,
it stops by 3 men diving at 3 men's knees. That's the only way you can kind of stop it.
Generally speaking, right, I'd say anything below level 4, 2 men is enough. Like 2 men, you can pretty much get over the game line. And the reason being is the ball carrier's shoulder height. The supporting guy is not necessarily there to push. He's there to hold him up. Because you're going so low, you've just got this guy and you're holding him
right
up.
Ride the initial contact and then you can pump the legs.
Yeah,
and
then you throw him over.
So the latching. So it happened in a Bristol game a couple of weeks ago where I think Bristol were penalised towards the end of a game. It might have caused a try. I can't remember. Anyway, Pat Lam wasn't happy because what the Bristol player had done was tackle the latcher. Because the guy picked it up, they were both running together, and they got penalised for hitting the supporting player.
Yeah.
And the Bristol players were going, but that's part of it. That's fine. Anyway, he got clarification, and yes, you're allowed to tackle the latcher, and he's happy now. So fine. Although some people are saying it's going to could cause more concussions. Dean Richards' view on that is, because he was asked about it as well after the game, and he said, well, you only ever pick and go at low speed. Generally, you don't get many concussions in that area. It's more at the high speed area, which I think the stats do back that up.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. Just because if from one step that you can get from the base of a ruck, you cannot be traveling as fast as through an outside channel.
It's not the concussion which would worry me about that. It's the neck injuries because you are going head to head and you're going lower. It's more the awkward neck positionings. I think
the bit that I think does need addressing, and that. If that is the response, it definitely doesn't address. Is the pre-bind on the?
It's an interesting one, Matt.
Because you should, in my mind, you should not be able to pre-bind on a ball carrier. Because it comes back to what was in the old days the flying wedge.
It's very similar, isn't it?
Yeah, and you do see it where there is a pre-bind of like 2 blokes. So it's instead of being 120 kg going against 120 kg. It is like 350 kg going against 120 kg.
The pre-bind, I think, is more egregious when you're standing up, ready to receive the pass.
Yeah.
And like you've got one guy whose body is open, and then you basically get your mate, and again, you ram him through a hole.
Yeah.
That's very effective. It's probably the most effective thing you can do.
It's also very difficult to stop. Police because
it's
so messy when you're in that
exactly. It's like when they tried for a brief period of time in one of the lower French leagues to do to eliminate 2-man tackles. You can't police it. And
to me, that's just
nonsense.
It's totally crazy.
Didn't we decide you could only tackle with the left shoulder going one way, and therefore
you have to structure your defence so you only tackle left shoulder or right shoulder.
So the rule is if they're going one way. No, one team can only tackle with the left shoulder, one team can only tackle with the right shoulder. Or no, actually, both teams can only tackle with the right shoulder.
If they're going from...
then you can never have a 2-man tackle.
Yeah, but if they're going from left to right, it needs to be, let's just say, the right shoulder. If they're going from right to left, it needs to be the left shoulder.
Some laws and rules, just you're making life... You're going to make things much, much worse if you try and solve it.
Oh, 100%. I'm not a fan of this. This is the most stupid thing I've ever thought of.
I think the pre-bind latching goes along with that. You'd get so many more whistles and
Did you? It's very hard though. You know, it's not like the olden days when you used to have cotton shirts. And you can, I mean, it is quite hard to grab hold
to bind
of
on
someone with a professional fit shirt. Like it's more, and also you got to get you got to get your timing right, haven't you? Because you can only bind when they hit contact. You can't bind when they have the ball.
If you're behind them, I think you can.
I don't think you can.
I don't know.
Yeah, you can wrap, can't you?
So balls there. He picked no, because then that is basically the flying wedge.
Yeah, so that happens not with the tap and go, but on the back of rooks that does happen.
Yeah, so you it's really important you pre-bind before you pick and go. It just is, but that is definitely illegal.
Yeah, but it happens all the time. It's not. Yeah. It's like it's not policed.
Feeding the scrum is technically illegal. Yeah. Oh, on this one thing, I'm delighted to say, isn't a thing anymore. Which no one said it, so I assume it's just sort of like much like a straight putting in a scrum.
They've got rid of resourcing the rook.
No.
Oh, is it? Oh. They're not going to say take our learnings.
No, they have. There's something which was around, or not around, actually, as the case may be, at the start earlier in the season, but is back. Even though it's not, they've not changed the laws. It's just suddenly back. Celebrating tries.
Oh.
I noticed it this weekend. The players are all hugging. They're all high-fiving. None of this air high tens rubbish, which is just ludicrous.
Performative. So the performative department of Premiership Rugby have shut their mouths for a little bit.
That particular performative element, which again, I never moaned about or said anything about, because as we talked about before, you pick your battles. But now that I've noticed that it's gone, I can say it was ridiculous.
Has it gone, or have they just forgot about it?
It was, well, they've either forgotten about it or... no one's enforcing it when they do it, so let the boys play.
Yeah, so are they still having sandwiches in little bags? So like part
on two buses.
So the COVID restrictions, like non-playing players couldn't watch, but the players were there, so that seems to have gone by the wayside.
That seems crazy.
Yeah, there were
two coaches was one of the things. As in, all players had to travel on two.
There's definitely two coaches there on Saturday.
Yeah.
Definitely two coaches. And... yeah, there's like weird little food rules that they had to go straight away. But there did seem to be a slight relaxing of regulations. I don't know, maybe they've not announced it. I've not seen anything on
roadmap to recovery.
I've not seen anything on the press on the press releases.
So nothing in written down has changed, but it was lovely to see players enjoying a try. Especially like when it's a match winning one like Marcus Smith or you know stuff like that. He's like, you know, much we talked about emotion a lot in early in the podcast. I just want to see them enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Rather than have to go, ooh.
Oh, can
get
I ask
away from me.
Question. Which was your favourite COVID breach for the Lions selection videos?
I love the teleporting Alan Wynne Jones.
Oh really?
yes.
Not the My favourite one for the wrong reasons was the Chris Boyd announcement to the Northampton squad. My favourite absolute one has to be Gloucester. I mean, that just looks so cool.
Yeah, Harris and Reece Amit both,
When they smash through the COVID screen. Get out of my way.
As I said on the midweek podcast, the bit we missed out of the middle of that, we got the Harris one and that was awesome. And then as they went through the names, the bit we missed was the deathly silence when they went past M.
What?
Johnny May.
Oh.
And they went past M. And then they got to R. And they went mad for Lewis Reece Amit.
So,
poor Johnny May.
Do you notice this one? Do you know? Okay, so Chris Boyd is a very serious man. He's not a funny guy, is he? I mean, he might.
Well,
be
he's very dry humoured. He is funny.
He is funny. Maybe this was a gag. I couldn't know if it's a gag. If it's a gag, it's bloody brilliant.
He will. I think he says very funny things, but he says it with no hint of humour on his face. And so you're not sure if he's joking or not.
Well, this guy actually could. This actually might be. Textbook at Boyd. So he's got the lads in a circle, right? And he goes, first of all, congratulations, Dan Bigger, because no one expected, well, everyone was expecting Dan Bigger.
I'm here to say we've got a two-time Lion in the squad.
Yeah, and then...
well done, Dan Bigger.
Oh, no, we didn't do that. He said, congratulations, Dan Bigger, and then he said, two-time Lion, Courtney Laws.
We said it to both of them.
Oh,
did he? I'm delighted to say we've got our fifth two-time Lion in the squad. Oh, sorry, I'm going to stop doing the Indies.
I'm enjoying it.
We've got our fifth two-time Lion in the squad. Congratulations, Dan Bigger. And then he says, and we have our sixth two-time Lion in the squad, Courtney Laws.
Yeah, right.
Awesome.
And then
what do you do?
And then he stood there. silently.
And he'll say yes.
And then we'll wait for it. He went, no, that's it.
There's a few players like, could it be?
I mean, who'd be next? Northampton.
Don't know, but I'd love it if he just threw a random one out there. I don't know. Try to think of someone.
Closest, maybe Ludlam? Maybe.
Yeah, you couldn't do it as a lad that like nearly is there, because that'd be, I mean, if it's Johnny May, it'd be devastating to say, Johnny May, you're in, only joking.
Right, oh, my God, that would be awful.
In front of all his mates. But you could do it to say, I don't know, Proctor. Or
Proctor.
Someone like that.
Young Englishman.
Yeah, congratulations, whoever it is. Grayson. Only joking, mate, only joking. Of course you're not. Of course you're not.
This is getting very long again, so let's try and rattle through, gents.
Is there much else to talk about?
Worcester went 10-0 up and then lost. Standard.
Yeah.
Hardest job in the Premiership, that. Hardest job in the Premiership.
Yeah. There's.
Do you know what? You give some, for the same stuff, you give some people so much. You vary. It's like your narrative is predetermined, and you'll squeeze whatever happens into that story.
Would you rather the Bath job or the Worcester job?
Of course I'd rather the Bath job.
Why?
But it's never, oh my God, what, Worcester are an absolute mess.
Oh yeah, they are. And that's why it's the hardest job in the Premiership,
oh, they're battling on bravely. I thought that's what you're saying.
No. Okay. They've got JT, who is like been there for three months or something like that. Can you turn the ship around, please? They're going to get rid of most of his players. He's going to have to bring in a load of new guys. It's like a 5-year project.
And he spends all his money on, or they spend all their money on outside backs in Juan Inanai and Duane van der Merwe.
They'll run out of patience with him before he gets time to prove himself. And as a first-time head coach with not very, very much support, he's onto hiding to nothing.
Well, yeah.
They're an absolute mess. That's why it's the hardest job in rugby. They need... I never said this last week. They need, and I hate saying they need five-year plans because it is an excuse, but they need to spend money, a lot of it now, on a good 15, not fullback, I mean 15 players. And that only when they start winning can they then start to afford to get middle-ranking players for less money.
So that's the London Irish plan.
Yeah.
London Irish are at stage one or two of that five-year plan.
Yeah, London Irish is exactly the sort of team that Worcester need right now.
Mm. That's all the games, isn't it?
No.
There were some Mushroom Cup games.
Oh, I'm not talking about...
Your beloved Ulster.
But JB's beloved Benetton are top of the league.
Yeah.
Of course they are.
Two from two.
And obviously.
After, in the regular season, I think they won one. No, they didn't even win a single game in the Pro 14.
I looked at the table yesterday and Leinster were bottom.
Not anymore,
but they
Ulster
were.
Ulster are officially bottom of the league now.
Ulster are bottom of the Mushroom Cup.
I mean, obviously I don't pay attention to anything outside the Premiership. Don't have time for it. But what is the general perception of the Rainbow Cup for the teams playing in it? Is there excitement around it?
There's no excitement around the Mushroom Cup whatsoever. I think that South African fans are a little disillusioned with the lack of interest and the mickey taking that's going on, even in the countries in the UK and Ireland that are involved in it.
So sad.
Because the fans aren't into it.
Yeah, and South Africa's quite a proud nation, isn't it?
It's
a very proud nation.
So they're looking at this going, oh, we're competing with these. Why are they all taking the mick out of it?
Yeah.
And then I'm calling it the Mushroom Cup, but I'm adding to it as well. But it's the most Pro 14-y thing that the Pro 14 has ever done.
It's so painful to watch.
Is cut a season short. I know they can't see into the future. They don't have a crystal ball, so I'm not knocking it. But it's so farcical. They've cut a season short to then play more games against the same teams.
Who'd have thought that a season called the Pro 14 with only 12 teams in it could be surpassed in its ludicrousness?
Hmm. That's a good question. Do you think there should be a committee somewhere which bans it from using the word pro until they're out of like pros?
until they get their act together.
Yeah, like the 14. 14 including some professional teams.
But yeah, now there are, well, there's 12 plus 4 now, so there's 16.
The AM 14.
Yeah. Something like that. Do you know what the shame is of Pro 14, actually? They were getting their act together. Slowly but surely, they're getting their act together pre-COVID.
Yeah. And COVID is the... determining factor in both of these issues.
How many times have we seen this? Well, it's part of it, but it's also that they're, I think they're making the same mistakes that we saw Super Rugby make. Super Rugby had a great thing going, and then it tried to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and ended up going, oh no, that's rubbish, we're going to have to go right back to square one again.
Mm.
I think the Pro 14's doing the same, and that's why I don't think this 14-team premiership next year is a good idea, because I think the same thing will happen there.
Yeah, you can't dilute your product, can you? Mm. It's so obvious.
Yeah.
Mm. Pro 14, very hard year. But, you know, it is what it is.
It certainly is. That's enough. Let's not talk about Ulster getting battered by Munster.
We have more Prem games next weekend.
We do.
Have we got anything exciting happening next weekend? Good.
Sounds like a hint.
What changes next weekend? Like, assuming everything goes to plan, because next
weekend...
The
week on Monday.
Monday. So, it's a good point, actually, of the games...
Oh, yeah, of course. This is different.
There's a Friday night game, Bath versus Sale. There are two Saturday games.
Yeah.
And then there are two Monday night games and one Tuesday night game. So,
yes.
So I'll go through them in order. Bath host Sale.
Okay.
Predictions?
Bath host Sale. If Bath don't beat Sale after everything I've said, I'll be amazed.
Yeah.
You've cursed.
You have cursed. Well, Priestland's back now, which could make a big difference for Bath. Not a huge difference for Bath. It'll make more of a difference. Orlando Bailey's clearly got a lot of talent, but he's a 19-year-old kid trying to knit together a Bath team that aren't gelling as it is.
He's probably got a tougher job than Jonathan Thomas.
It's going to
be... I think Sale will do that.
Yeah.
I would hope so. At this point,
Saturday we've got Wasps hosting Warriors, Worcester Warriors. That is
not Wigan,
not Glasgow.
Okay, and definitely not Celtic Warriors.
So not anymore.
That'll be
Wasps.
Wasps.
Yes, in that West Midlands derby.
They all are Midlands they derby. Quite close neighbours, aren't they?
Yeah,
they're
not a million miles away. Yeah, Coventry to.
Just realised that you're clearly symptomatic with something, JB, and we're in a. I mean, I'm 2 metres away from you, but we're in a room together.
Do you want to know what
it's
it is?
Good 2 metres as well.
I think it's called a lint scraper type of thing.
You sent me a video. You've got like cat allergies, despite owning two cats, and you've been brushing down cat hair all day.
Yeah, so it's like this little metal, like wiry thing, and you scrape on the carpet, and it makes you feel like you're filthy. So I'm doing the stairs, just collecting cat hair, and I feel awful for it. Just decatting the house, basically.
So we're all saying Wasps against Worcester.
Yep.
Now Leicester versus Quins.
Yeah.
So Leicester having rested all their players.
Quins with no Esther Hayes and no Brown, no Evans. Big test of Magic Marcus up against George Ford. That's the storyline right there, isn't it? Ford Smith.
This will be a good game, I think. And give me Leicester at home.
Leicester.
I think I fancy Leicester as well. Particularly as soon as I saw the squad that they took to Sale, I thought,
they're going for the next.
For the next game.
Then on Monday night rugby, we've got Falcons versus Northampton.
That will be... Oh! Falcons were good. Northampton were bad.
Northampton were bad. Losing Bigger was huge because they had to bring Nairavoro on and Furbank went to 10.
Definitely Saints, I think.
Hmm.
Although it depends. If Carl Ferns plays, I'll go with...
Depends if Dan Bigger plays as well.
Yeah, that is it. I mean, they're equally as important.
They are.
Important news for any players of fantasy rugby draft. This doesn't affect you two because neither are you in the playoffs. But this is important for me because I am in the playoffs. Round 19 does not count because of the midweek games.
Oh,
so the semi-finals will be the weekend.
Did I not make the playoffs?
No, you...
Did I win this week?
No, you lost heavily to me. And
did you win one game this year?
Two.
One? No, you won one.
Did I really?
You won. Well, I'll check that because it was an.
It's this season.
I'll put it this way: I'm trying to put the finishing touches to a special last place trophy, which maybe I will present you.
Of course,
on live on next week's podcast on the YouTube feed.
I can't wait for that. That'll be great.
So
you've officially won two games this whole season.
Yes, double what you said.
Then two wins, 16 defeats.
Once again,
and you've got the audacity to have a pop at Stuart Hooper.
I think, honestly, if you put me in charge of Bath, I could lose 10 games. I'm pretty sure I could do that.
Give me Northampton Saints. I think Northampton will have the bounce back, either with Bigger or Grayson or someone else.
I suspect you're right there. I'm going to say that. Oh, it's not an easy place to go. But yes, Northampton.
No. And then Bristol host Gloucester, which I think will be a home win.
Yeah, and Complete Toffee, hello to you, long-time listener and friend of the pod, on the live chat says, fans back next week. It's Monday Night Lights, Bristol v Gloucester, a 7K crowd.
Yeah, 7,000 people. That'd be awesome.
Because Ashton Gate holds 26,000. So it's like just over 8,000, a quarter.
Maybe.
So that's great. That's absolutely brilliant. And
have you heard that they've sold 7,000 season tickets at Gloucester?
Yeah, that's phenomenal.
Gloucester, Bristol.
Bristol. Fair weather fans. Where were you when the team? No, I'm joking.
Exactly right.
That is amazing. No, it is amazing. Bristol have got more, significantly more season ticket holders than sales average attendance.
Not significantly more.
I think it is, mate.
That's not to knock sale.
It sounds
a little bit like that.
I know. I realize it sounds like that. That wasn't my intention. My intention was to say, just to give it a context,
sale before
how
COVID,
impressive that is for
sale
Bristol.
Before COVID, I'll have you know, had the highest percentage growth of any crowd in the Premiership.
From the preceding season.
Doesn't matter when it's from, Phil. Just take the stats at face value, please.
So we're all saying home win for Bristol against Gloucester.
There are lies, damn lies and statistics. Yes, it's going to be a Bristol win.
And then Tuesday night rugby, Premiership rugby on a Tuesday. We've got London Irish versus Exeter Chiefs, which will be Exeter.
Well, will it? Because are they playing the following weekend? Because then they might be on a short turnaround. Exeter might go, do you know what? We'll send a B team to London Irish and we'll have our first team for the home match.
Home game will be
against Newcastle.
Okay.
So it does. Yeah, I think they will play a stronger team against Newcastle, but I think a 1A and 1B team can win both of those games for Exeter.
We didn't really talk about them on this podcast, but they were impressive again. After I saw the score, someone messaged me and said, and just sent me a screenshot of the Worcester score, which was 12-0 or something.
10-0. It was 10-0.
I went, whoa.
And then
I put it on and then, order is restored.
Yeah, 41 unanswered points.
Yes.
Game over. Yeah.
I'll see if there's a game I can go and visit.
Give me Exeter. Closest to us would be Wasps. Wasps or Leicester on the Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
Or Newcastle on the...
could do a Monday night.
Newcastle is the one I'm looking at.
Monday Newcastle night, on Monday night.
Monday night Newcastle.
Yeah, I'd be interested.
I'd finish it. I'd have to change... Well, I do CrossFit Monday evenings.
Well, why don't we do the early morning CrossFit? And not only can we travel to Newcastle, we can talk about the CrossFit on the way there.
2 hours locked in a car talking about CrossFit.
What is it?
You're lucky. It'll be 2 hours on a train. It'll be. Oh no, actually, it's quicker to drive to Newcastle, isn't it?
Yeah,
you have to go across the train.
Go to disaster.
Yeah, Leeds and up or up to. I don't know.
I wouldn't mind going to Newcastle. I'd like to go to Newcastle.
Yeah, but then you finish at 10, and then you won't get back home till 1 a.m. Then you got 5 hours till CrossFit.
Yeah, that's true. Why don't we just drive straight to the car park? Come on, there.
Do burpees while we're waiting.
Yeah. I'd be keen for that.
That's all the games.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Unless you want to run through the Rainbow Cup games.
Nope, they're good.
Is there any good Mushroom Cup matches?
What do they call it? The Glasgow, Edinburgh. It's all the derbies.
Okay.
Oh, that means Ulster lose again against Leinster.
More derbies.
Three losses.
Wow.
Dragons, Ospreys, Edinburgh, Glasgow. JB, your beloved Benetton could finish top of the table.
Well, is that because we're just playing Zebra every weekend? Is that...
You played Glasgow once and then two games against Zebra.
Madness.
You're going to finish top.
Well done. Well deserved, lads.
And then it's a straight playoff between... I think it's just a... Is it a straight playoff? Who knows?
I'll tell you what. Quick message to... people watching the live feed. Thank you for anyone that's stuck with us.
Really well done.
Clearly, there's a void in your life that needs filling. I'm sure you can do better than this, but thank you very much for watching. Hit that little like button before we go, because it just helps the algorithm and it helps people find us and all that. I don't really know
why.
How.
Yeah, I don't know why. James, James Abraham said it is important, so it's important to me.
You
it's
know,
important,
so, then. Like button really helps, because like people who like rugby who don't know about us might find us. And,
we are going for lunch. I mean, because you're not coming on the Friday, are you, of the
North Dorset
North
Sevens.
Dorset Sevens?
No, because I'm doing my rugby. I'm doing my radio show and then my rugby radio show.
Kind of a big deal. Well, me and Phil are.
You know how it is.
And because you're not coming, not because, but. Not doing this
because Tim's not coming. We're going to do something really fun.
James, yeah. Tim's not there. Oh, okay, I'll see you there.
Yeah. So, on the Friday, we are travelling down a little bit earlier to have lunch with a seriously high powered bigwig in sport. I can't tell you who it is, and if you want to know,
you just said his name.
No, you just said his name.
No, you did.
No, I'm a different thing.
Oh, a different one.
No, so I just said something.
Is it different from the name you just said about 2 minutes ago?
Well, I'm going to say it is now, although it's not. Hey, that's what reminded me.
Okay. Right.
But, well, you can't come, so I definitely can't come now.
Right. I've enjoyed today. It was really good. Thank you very much for watching. Hit like and hit that little red subscribe button, because tomorrow I will make sure that Chris Harris video at JB, Chris Harris chat that JB did goes up. And there'll be more videos coming in your feed very soon. And one of these days, it might even be with Phil.
Maybe.
The general consensus, Phil, by the way, just a bit of feedback, is you should only be allowed to take scissors to your locks when Hamish Watson takes scissors to his locks.
Great shout. Can I just give a shout out to the Rugby Dungeon, which will be happening this week?
Oh, yeah.
Got the return of Steve Diamond on Monday night.
Wonderful.
So,
wow.
I'm looking forward to that. I'll be dynamite, and I've got two in the pipeline, which are going to be absolutely awesome. So
Steve
watch out
Diamond.
For that.
Love it.
Yep.
Cannot wait to hear that.
I'm
love it.
Very, very excited.
You recorded it?
No. Tomorrow night.
Okay.
8 Ooh. O'clock.
Nice.
Meeting of two great rugby minds.
That will be.
Both of them belong to Steve Diamond.
That will be incredible.
So there we go. Thank you very much for watching. Hopefully through this podcast, if you're listening to it, hopefully if you haven't already, we've earned you just hitting subscribe in your podcast feed wherever you get yours. If you're watching, hopefully we've earned that little click on the subscribe button there in the YouTube channel, and patreon.com/eggchasers. You can go and see the video of us pretending not to be hammered for the World Rugby cameras in Romania and the type of event we cannot wait to happen again when things slowly but surely get back to normal. In the meantime, let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.